This is the podcast of the German Historical Institute London, a research centre dedicated to supporting and connecting students and scholars from Britain and Germany. The podcast series presents current research in British, German and European history, as well as colonial and global history. For more information on the German Historical Institute London, future events, the GHIL Library, studentships and more podcast episodes, please visit our website at ghil.ac.uk.
In this joint GHIL lecture in cooperation with the Modern History Seminar, IHR, Martina Hessler from the Technical University of Darmstadt talks about flawed humans, or what makes technology better than humans, historical considerations on humans as, quote, faulty constructions, unquote. It is said that to be human is to be flawed, limited, and finite. However, the meaning of, quote, flawed, unquote, has changed over time. The lecture argues that in the 19th century, a new conceptual framework for human deficiency emerged that compares humans with technology. This concept became ubiquitous in the 20th century and still determines discourses on technology today. Unlike philosophical and anthropological theories of man as a deficient creature, see Herder and Gehlen, this lecture does not assume that human beings are biologically deficient by, quote, nature, unquote. Instead, it examines the cultural construction of faultiness in different contexts such as work, mobility, love, and decision-making. Or to echo Günther Anders, it asks how humans have become a, quote, faulty construction, unquote, in a technological world. Martina Hessler is professor of the history of technology at the Technical University of Darmstadt. Her research interests center on the man-machine relationship in the 20th century and on the history of emotions. She's currently writing a monograph on the history of, quote, flawed humans, unquote.
First, I would like to thank you for the invitation. I'm really happy to be here. It's my great pleasure to share my ideas and my thoughts about my book project about flawed humans with you. And of course, I invite your comments and your critique. In particular, I'm going to present work in progress. So I'm really keen on getting a feedback and what you think about my ideas. So I would like to show a few quotations. They are taken from current articles in contemporary media and journals. And as you will see, they show a pattern of argumentation certainly familiar to everyone here. So first example, autonomous driving will eliminate human error and drastically reduce the number of accidents. This is an often heard argument these days. The former chief developer of Google Cars called humans the last bug in the system. And in 2015, engineers announced a smart factory in which human errors would be impossible at all. A Japanese hotel owner enthusiastically talked about his reception robot. The robot is, quote, unbeatable when it comes to manners. And so the entrepreneur was very pleased. Robotic expert, and that's less funny, Ronald Arkin, argued that technology's lack of emotion is a great advantage in war times. Unlike humans, robots would not act out of fear, anger, or revenge. Instead, they would simply follow clearly defined rules. Therefore, he continues his line of thought, drones can be accepted to kill more humanly, more ethically than humans. And here's my last example. During the 2016 US presidential campaign, an independent organization called for IBM's Watson computer to be nominated as a candidate. A computer, this so-called interdependent organization argued, is able to process a gigantic amount of information. It acts rationally and it's value neutral. Therefore, Watson would be able to take into account a wide variety of perspectives and make complex and transparent decisions. Watson was thus superior to humans. This suggestion was taken so seriously that IBM felt compelled to deny that the company planned to have Watson run as a candidate for US president. Whenever I came across such arguments, I became bewildered, but also amazed. Amazed above all at the fact that these arguments get repeated constantly and in the most diverse contexts. I was even more surprised at the ensuing reactions to the figure of humans as flawed beings when compared to technology. It is fear that technology will outperform humans, thus making them obsolete. The flip side of this fear is the insistence that humans are superior to technology. However, the figure of the human as a deficient being, the figure itself, was never questioned at all. This led me to my book project and the following questions. So it is my overarching goal to write a history of the figure of humans regarded as flawed when compared to technology. Thus, I do not intend to write a history of human factors engineering with a nuanced view of the varying emphasis on human potential or limitations. Instead, I focus very much on the comparison of humans and technology, which seems to me central to modernity. It is certainly provocative to tell the story of flawed humans in this way, exactly because it has such a narrow focus. However, I echo the philosopher Günther Anders, who wrote, quote, that there are phenomena which have to be over-exaggerated and magnified, because otherwise they would remain unidentifiable or invisible, end of quote. This is exactly why I would like to put the figure of flawed humans under my historical microscope. And here are my goals in more detail, so to give you an overview. When one deals with the figure of flawed humans, one very quickly comes across the philosophical anthropological, So my goals in detail, that's the right slide. I would like to show the historicity of the figure. I'm interested in the emergence and the change of this figure. Second, I'm interested in analyzing the historically varying ascriptions of errors to humans. Thus, I do not analyze humans' mistakes and their causes in particular practices and situations. That is what accident research, psychology, or management theories do. However, I find it less interesting that humans make mistakes. Rather, I'm interested in what is defined as error, as mistake, as deficiency, at what time, and by whom, and why, and in which context. By context, I mean different areas of the life world, such as working, mobility, decision-making, as well as social and emotional relationships. And I also plan a chapter about the body in my book. This includes analyzing the respective norms, values, and standards that lead to the definition of errors. So third, I look for differentiations in these ascriptions of errors. For example, are women considered more deficient than men, old people more than young people, and so on and so forth. However, I can already tell that such differentiations are surprisingly rare. Over the course of 200 years, the figure of the flawed human has appeared largely universalistically and has been used mainly in singular form. So fourth and finally, by writing the history of the flawed human, I would like to contribute to a deeper understanding of historical concepts of man and machine, and also to a better understanding of technical modernity. The figure of the flawed human, I argue, shows us more about the respective societies where it appears than about what supposedly constitutes a human being. So one central goal of my book is to ask what the consequences are when humans are looked at from the point of view of deficiency. So that brings me to the thesis of my lecture today. When one deals with the figure of flawed humans, one very quickly comes across the philosophical anthropological concept of the Mängelwesen. The German word Mängelwesen translates to deficient creature or flawed being. But I will use the German word because it's such an important term, such an important concept in German philosophy. The Mängelwesen is, as I said, a very important and well-known concept in German philosophy. In order to understand the figure of flawed humans, it is necessary to place it in line with the concept of the Mängelwesen. This makes it clear that the figure of flawed humans is in continuity with the philosophical concept of Mängelwesen, but at the same time, it represents a historically new figure. So I claim that in the 19th and 20th centuries, this concept of the Mangelwesen has changed into a figure of flawed humans, juxtaposed by technology that was regarded as better in many respects. Thus, the Mangelwesen has left philosophical and intellectual discourses behind and has become an ubiquitous figure shaped by engineers, technicians, scientists, experts, and entrepreneurs. The figure of flawed human appears as a product of what I call mechanical modernity. The figure makes central features of modernity visible in a very condensed way, as if under a magnifying glass. At the same time, some paradoxes are inherent in this figure. I will address these towards the end of my lecture. So now I will give you a short outline what I will do in the next 30 minutes. So of course, I will first briefly refer to the philosophical concept of the Mangelwesen, and I will do so in order to then second ask about the historical emergence of the figure of humans who appear flawed when compared to technology. Third, I will examine the ascriptions of human errors and deficiencies in different contexts, and that might be the hard part of my lecture because you only hear about errors and mistakes of humans. So finally, I will raise the questions, what are the consequences of interpreting humans from the point of view of deficiency? It is here that I will point to some interesting paradoxes, as already mentioned. So the German Mangelwesen. Humans are flawed. There's no doubt about that. Nevertheless, it is remarkable that various myths place deficiency, a lack of something, at the beginning of human history. It is also remarkable that deficiency represents the oldest anthropological interpretation of what constitutes humanity. Just look at the Christian narrative of original sin, which has defined humans as, in principle, morally flawed. We also find the idea in Plato's Protagoras, Epitemos endowed all beings with gifts, the birds with wings, the fish with gills, etc., etc., but he forgot to give a gift to the humans so that were not able to survive by nature. His brother Prometheus had to correct this mishap by bringing fire to humans, as the story goes. From time immemorial, descriptions of humans as naked, without fur to keep them warm, unshod, and lacking weapons and instincts, as pitiably weak creatures, form the vivid core of the concept of the Mangelwesen. Similar descriptions can be found in many places and at many times. I gave you an example from antiquity, but in the 18th century, there's Herder, and in the 20th century, there's Galen. Over the course of millennia, these descriptions, which describe humans as poorly endowed by nature, resemble one another, even down to the choice of words. Very briefly, I will limit myself to four crucial features in the philosophical concept of the Mangelwesen, notwithstanding any differences. So just the core of this concept. First, the concept of Mangelwesen is based on a comparison. Humans are always defined in comparison to something. And second, in the philosophical concept, this something is the animal. Compared to any animal, humans turned out to be unable to survive by nature. Third, this is a result of their poor biological equipment. That is a weak and poorly designed human body. Thus, the human body is deficient in principle. And fourth, the idea of Mangelwesen does not end with the idea of a principal biological deficiency of humans. Rather, deficiency and along with it, the ensuing necessity to secure human survival is the reason for the outstanding position of humans in nature and in the world. Accordingly, the deficiency, or rather its overcoming, leads to the supposed superiority of humans over all other beings. And this is how the reasoning goes in a nutshell. The deficiency forces humans to compensate by developing and improving skills in general. They are therefore cultural beings, also endowed with language. Deficiency is thus compensated for and leads to improvement and enhancement. That is the argumentative pattern of the concept of Mangelwesen. In recent times, the concept of Mangelwesen has been problematized and questioned from different perspectives. The idea of looking at humans with their original biological deficiency as a given came under fundamental criticism from several points of view. Within the humanities and cultural studies, the premises and the consequences of the concept of Mangelwesen have been critically reflected upon. Its supposed universalism and its Eurocentrism were pointed out. Furthermore, the viewpoint of deficiency as linchpin came under criticism in general. Klaus Birnstiel, for example, emphasized the inevitability of human incapacity and opposed the idea of a possible cure for incapacity. Disability studies have shown that culturally determined norms and societal ascriptions that define a body as deviating from a set norm were decisive for interpreting a body as deficient, not the state of the body itself. And I take up this critique by examining the cultural and societal conditions under which humans are interpreted and defined as flawed in comparison to technology. So on the one hand, I analyze the figure of flawed humans as it has changed in different contexts historically. And on the other hand, I regard this figure as a lens to point to the conditions and consequences of this way of thinking, and consequently as a figure of critique. So now I come to the empirical part of my talk. So the first question, as I announced, is since when has this figure of flawed human existed? So the emergence of the figure. To the best of my knowledge, the beginnings of this figure can be found in the early 19th century. And it's not happenstance that we are looking at England in the context of industrialization. I would like to point out two examples, the discourse about calculating machines and the discourse about the role of humans in the factory. So I start with the calculating machines. In 1825, the Astronomical Society awarded Charles Babbage a gold medal for his invention of a calculating machine. The machine was said to work, quote, with a speed and precision unattainable by humans, even with unremitting practice and undivided attention. Emphasis was put above all on the fact, quote again, that the automatic machine bypasses the numerous sources of error. Babbage himself reported that he had come up with the idea of building a machine to calculate mathematical and astronomical tables in order to exclude any error. He wanted to remedy what he called his evil of errors by using a machine. Every error was supposed to be excluded. Babbage was disgusted by human carelessness. He had found innumerable errors in even the most prestigious astronomic tables. 500 errors, he explained, alone in one compendium, for example. Another commentator had discovered a total of 3,700 errors in 40 tables. So many contemporaries have stressed the problem of human errors and suggested those could be eliminated by using calculating machines. What is evident from these comments is an astounding obsession with and downright contempt for human fallibility. Humans are described as careless, as inaccurate, as arbitrary, as having a poor memory, and juxtaposed to these traits are the, quote again, infallible accuracy of the machine and its absolute correctness in unlimited abundance. So fallible support of human arithmetic would become obsolete, and all these things arithmetic would from now on be handled by an authority as tireless as it is infallible, quote again. So I come to the beginning of this figure in the factory, my second example for the emergence of this figure. I will now come to the mechanization of the factory and the arguments that arose concurrently. I will address this somewhat more briefly, though. The figure of deficient, insufficient, even wayward humans who disrupt, slow down, or hinder the processes of smooth, efficient production has repeatedly and persistently made its appearance since the early 19th century. In his book, Philosophy of Manufacture, published in 1835, Andrew Ure wrote that humans' weakness and their irregularities in performing work, quote, make do great damage to the whole. You lamented the poor performance and slow work speed of humans compared to technology. Humans, he claimed, endanger the whole system of factory work. And though we see that many of today's arguments have already been put on the table in the early 19th century. Humans are too slow, they are imprecise, their work product is not uniform. So in the following, I would like to give an overview of errors and deficiencies ascribed to humans in different contexts, focusing now mainly on the second half of the 20th century. In this brief overview, historical differentiations do get lost to a certain degree, but today, I'm not concerned with these differences that can be found over time. Rather, I would like to summarize the core arguments in more abstract terms. So I come back again to the example of the factory. I mentioned that Andrew Ure had already shown persistent arguments about what has become interpreted as flaws in humans. Many of these arguments are familiar to all of us because they get so stereotypically hammered home over and over again. Humans are inattentive and unreliable. They fatigue easily, are willing to spontaneously change procedures. They demand vacation time, higher wages, and might even go on strike now and then. In an automated factory, human senses get overstressed in monitoring tasks, and slow speed is once again a point of contention. It is remarkable how clearly and distinctively, almost dismissively, engineers and entrepreneurs used to describe humans as problematic, as a disruptive factor and source of error. This can be observed right up to the 1970s or 80s. In 1938, the German automation engineer Dole Czalek equated the elimination of errors from the production with the elimination of humans. In the 1950s, John Diebold spoke of humans as insufficiently designed for the production system. And as late as 1979, under the headline Deficiencies of Humans, an article in a German engineering journal enumerated a plethora of human errors. And it is a veritable laundry list of the aforementioned faults to which laziness and mental sluggishness and much more have been added. In the debate about human errors, I come to the next example, mobility. In the debate about human errors associated with automobiles, the picture becomes even grimmer. Experts in traffic accidents or error research are not the only ones who comment on human errors encountered in road traffic. Particularly with road traffic, the figure of flawed humans is omnipresent and it's reproduced in popular literature, in the media, right down to jokes. Human errors stem, so that's what I found in the sources, from various categories. On the one hand, there are those that are conditioned in the human body. And on the other hand, we are confronted with errors that are of a moral, ethical nature, which then are called sins. The figure of the traffic violator emerged, and the German word is literally Trafficsünder, as a Verkehrssünder. So first back to the physical shortcomings. The range from, as these physical shortcomings range from poor eyesight, which deplorably the thus incriminated human being would often not notice him or herself, to fatigue or the inability to judge speed correctly, slow reactions to unforeseen situations, the instability of the physical constitution, and so on and so forth. In the beginning of the 1960s, some medical experts were convinced that human beings were fundamentally overstrained due to their physical constitution. So one quote from a German journal, "It is a painful insight that the automobile, this most ingenious means of transport of the 20th century, is unfortunately also subject to limitations that have their roots in human deficiencies and fallibility." This argument that technology is much more advanced than humans, who thus became a stumbling block on the path to progress, is an important argument in the discourse on flawed humans. At the same time, it is a powerful accusation leveled at them, thereby revealing a deep disappointment or anger that humans are preventing technological progress. In addition, humans commit many so-called sins, which are problematic for traffic regulation. So that are complaints about bad manners, rudeness, boorishness, about human aggression, inconsideration, emotionality, irrationality, overconfidence, stupidity, and above all, that's very important, above all, always about rule breaking. All this runs through the history of driving. Especially in the 1950s, moral errors in road traffic were not only called a sin, but were often equated with deviance and with antisocial behavior. Humans were supposed to behave according to a given rule. They were expected to accept an orderly system of rules into which a driver had to fit in. A good driver was a conscientious driver, which meant that he, and this was indeed mostly a he, obeyed rules and laws. In the 1960s, traffic experts complained that humans crossed a street diagonally in opposition to correct perpendicular crossing. So that's one some example for this discourse. In the mid-1980s, one of the engineers involved in the European research project on autonomous driving explained that project's very necessity by claiming that humans made far too many mistakes. And here we have one of the many examples in which purported human error explicitly justifies the development of a new technology. So I come to my last example, this talk. At the beginning, I mentioned the robotic expert, Robert Akin. Akin claimed that drones would kill more humanly than humans because they would not show emotions. And he insisted that they would follow rules. This corresponds to a way of thinking that Paul Erickson and others have called the Cold War rationality. It goes back to the idea that machines are able to make better decisions than humans and is characterized by rule-based procedures to eliminate subjectivity, emotionality, and irrationality. Here too, rule following is the ideal good behavior. However, humans do not always follow rules. They decide situationally, emotionally, or based on intuition. I have not completed my research on the history of decision making yet. However, I can see two things. First, there have been plenty of debates about the need for rules of thumb, gut feeling, and intuition since the 1970s and 80s. However, I claim that the idea remains powerful, that pure rationality and rule-following decision-making, thus automated decision-making, is regarded superior to humans who exhibit bias, decide too intuitively and emotionally. It follows that, therefore, they are to be distrusted. Remember the Watson proposal I mentioned in the beginning? So nominating a computer to run in the presidential campaign was meant to counteract candidate Donald Trump's feared irrationality. I will stop listing all kinds of ascribed human errors. And now I would like to elevate these concrete and detailed ascribed deficiencies to a more abstract level. I already mentioned the distinction between physical shortcomings and moral ethical sins, which both are found in discourses about flawed humans. And this mirrors the two original narratives of human deficiencies. We see them in the biblical narrative of original sin and the philosophical concept of the Mängelwesen. Putting the most frequently mentioned human flaws side by side, an astoundingly clear and coherent picture emerged. Humans are inattentive, unfocused, they get tired, their work product is not uniform, they are much too slow, they are not precise, above all, they do not follow rules, they are unpredictable, willful and quirky, irrational, and in a negative sense, emotional. What becomes more and more clear now is that these shortcomings are defined with the mechanical machine as standard of perfection. The regularity of mechanical machine, its predictability, the sameness of its action, its reliability became the standard by which humans were measured. Thus, the figure of the flawed human condenses in an almost disturbing way characteristics of modernity as they have been described many times. Zygmunt Bauman stated that the modernity had given itself the task of doing order. So he talked about the order as obsession, which he interpreted as a central feature of modernity. And this order of obsession is embodied by the figure of the flawed human. Humans, by their nature, as it said, constantly disrupt and upset orders. Compared to technology, which is supposed to guarantee order and compliance with rules, humans are chaotic figures who must be eliminated, replaced, or at least contained. So I do not intend to write the history of modernity in such a simple way without showing any ambivalences. This would mean falling behind the state of research, of course. However, I would like to say that the figure of flawed human epitomizes such a regulated, ordered, standardized, and homogeneous modernity. In a condensed way, the attributions of error show the values of what I would like to call an ordered and mechanical modernity. The figure of flawed humans crystallize to a very pure figure of a mechanical modernity over the course of more than 200 years. The figure shows no ambivalences, no vagueness, no in-betweeners. And in these discourses, humans are defined as deficient because they do not and they cannot satisfy the demands of regularity, standardization, and order. And that brings me to the last part of my presentation. So here's a question: what are the consequences of this way of thinking for the man-machine relationship within a technological culture, and what can you learn about society from looking at it? I have tried to show that interpreting humans as flawed was a result of ordered and mechanical thinking. It resulted from the comparison with technology, or to be precise, with a mechanical machine. Logically, this comparison eventually led to replacing humans by machines. In the 1950s, an engineer, I quoted him, put it this way: eliminating human errors means eliminating humans. And it is an argument that is still around today in the context of autonomous driving, as well in the hope for better algorithmic decision making. But these expectations and hopes have been disappointed again and again. Neither do autonomous cars not cause accidents, nor does artificial intelligence make bias-free decisions. And this leads to various paradoxes inherent in the figure of flawed humans, which result from looking at humans from the perspective of deficiency. So that's very short, but we can, of course, discuss that later. First, eliminating human errors or overcoming human limitation has always led to new human errors. Being able to drive a car was celebrated as overcoming human limitations and enhancing human capabilities of movement. However, humans have become flawed in a new way and a new dimension when using such technology. For example, they were able to move more quickly, but at the same time, they could not react quickly enough for driving safely. Humans were and are largely unable to judge the speed of an oncoming car. And a new term was coined, the blind spots in traffic situations. So in certain areas around them, human drivers are unable to see obstacles. So there are new emerging limitations or errors of human in a technological environment. Second, overcoming human deficiency has led to the paradox of permanent technological improvement. New technical means have been invented to guard against newly discovered human errors and deficiencies. Once more, here a traffic-related example to illustrate this. Human braking power was technically enhanced, or automobiles were given sensors to see better in fog or to perceive obstacles. Many more examples could be added to show that overcoming human limitation and flaws by means of technology have led to the need of, again, technically enhanced human capabilities. And in this context, I would like to point to the emergence of digital history, which is supposed to enable us as scholars to evaluate and process the vast amounts of data that we produce ourselves. So third, I see a third paradox in the fact that overcoming human errors by means of technology has also led to errors on limits of technology. Technology is expected to perform in a perfect and reliable way, but this doesn't always happen. Technology makes mistakes too, and the more complex the technology, the higher the rate of errors. The narrative of a perfect technology, which turned humans into flawed beings, is repeatedly undermined by the occurrence of technical errors. Nevertheless, the narrative survives, as the quotations from my opening remarks have shown. So, fourth and finally, a fourth and closely related paradox is a newfound appreciation for human abilities, at least partially and temporarily. The history of automation, for example, was repeatedly challenged by the limits of the rule-like nature of technology. In the context of the factory, this led to a reassessment of human capabilities in the 1980s. Human flexibility, the spontaneous ability to react, which was considered bad before, was emphasized now and at times presented as indispensable. So, I conclude. I hope to have shown that the figure of humans who are flawed in comparison to technology has become the Mangelwesen of modernity. Thereby, I would like to stress first that the philosophical anthropological concept of the Mangelwesen has changed fundamentally since the time of the industrialization. Nowadays, humans are being interpreted as deficient in a new manner. Thus, I would like to stress that this oldest anthropological interpretation of humans as Mangelwesen is still prevalent in the Western world. And second, I would like to emphasize that new definitions of errors have emerged in a technological culture. For example, take the crafts of the pre-modern era. By no means were the lack of precision in the weaving or the irregularities of masonry work considered errors. Technology, or more precisely, the mechanical machine, has set new standards for correctness, for correct behavior, or what is considered better. And it made humans appear erroneous in a historical new way. While the traditional concept of the Mangelwesen has been criticized on various occasions, this does not apply to the figure of the flawed human. It is still reproduced in a relatively unreflected manner these days. The figure is not scrutinized or questioned as a product of a specific historical constellation which elevated mechanical machines to the gold standard for evaluating humans. I see the figure looming large these days, and it seems to me that it's still effective in precisely this mechanical modern form. It represents the idea of a world that is better when everything is regular, reliable, orderly, rational, and predictable. Although all the ambivalences and paradoxes that arise from the elimination of human error by means of technology are obvious and well known. The figure of the flawed human and its counterpart, superior technology, seem to first and foremost express a strong wish which humans feel living in an unpredictable, complex, irrational world. The wish for an orderly and predictable world. Thus, scrutinizing the figure of flawed human reveals less about what constitutes humans than about socially dominant expectations, norms, and values. Efforts to overcome flawed humans have consistently promised a better, even more ethical world, even more human world. This better world would be realized by technological progress and would be a world of safety, perfection, precision, smooth, conflict-free operations, rationality, prosperity, and efficiency, but also of technically generated and guaranteed humanity. The words "get all the better the more" gets delegated to technology. And this faith in the superiority of technology, however, bases and justifies itself on a technical logic. The standards for rightness, as well as the basis for a good life, are the values of technology: rule-based, rationality and predictability, productivity and efficiency. However, such a faith in technology always risks getting disappointed, as I have tried to show by pointing out the paradoxes in her. Finally, the promise of approaching a better world by eliminating, containing, or enhancing flawed humans leads to a logical conclusion. It is the ideal that post-humanists have already the world without the best of all worlds. I thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you for listening to the German Historical Institute London podcast. follow us on social media, and check our website to keep up to date with new episodes.